Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Santa Fe, New Mexico, earned a college degree, taught high school social studies for 17 years, and was a successful real estate developer. He did all of this without being able to read. At age 48, after being encouraged by Barbara Bush, he learned to read and has authored two books, The Teacher Who Couldn't Read and The Bridge to Literacy. His name, John Corcoran. And I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. We're with the author of The Teacher Who Couldn't Read and The Bridge to Literacy, John Corcoran. John, welcome. An honor to have you.
An honor to be here. My pleasure.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad?
Yes. The best place to start. My father and mother were both literate, and they were both very interested in education and pro-literate literacy, and my five sisters could all read. I had a loving home environment, no drugs, no alcohol, no divorce. For an Irish Catholic family, I guess you would say we were functional, if there's such a thing, in that group. But my father was, and I think about this, matter of fact, before we started the interview, I was kind of reflecting, and I think I was so blessed to have a father that was so loving, so courageous. He was the best man that I ever knew in my life, and he wasn't flawless, but he was really a great man. He was the best man, and my mother was a very prayerful woman, and prayed for me every day of my life while she was here, and sometimes twice a day.
John, how do you explain that you never learned to read?
You know, like children, and we're sent off to school at the age of 5 or 6 with high hopes to learn to read. I was sent off to school, and I was going to learn to read like my sisters learned to read. And it was primarily in our culture, the schools have been the primary providers of literacy skills. And so I went off, and I was about 30% of the population has difficulty processing language, learning to read. And it's difficult for them. And in those days, we just passed those kids along. We've had social promotion for a long time. So in my elementary years, I would say I don't want to say a victim, because I don't see myself as a victim, but I was certainly involved in the educational practice of being passed along according to age, not based on the skills. And that's what happened to me, and it happened to millions of children. Some people learn to read like birds learn to fly. They just walk by the library, and they get it. And a lot of people in the audience, listening audience, that had the gift of that skill early and didn't struggle with it, it's hard for them to imagine how many of us really struggle with the acquisition of language. And we aren't dumb. Reading is a skill. It can be taught, and we can learn it, and the human brain is capable of learning it. But the key to teaching little boys and little girls like me to read and write and spell is proper instruction, and proper instruction comes from properly trained teachers, and properly trained teachers come from universities that properly prepared them. And we now know how to teach little boys and little girls like me to read. And if you miss the window of opportunity in elementary school, if you don't learn to read by the time you're in the third or fourth grade, that window of opportunity of direct skills passes you by. And I was moved on, and in the fourth grade, and where were my parents? My parents went to school and had conferences, and they were told, Johnny's a smart boy. He's got great math skills, good social skills, loves recess, he's respectful. But he's a little behind here, but he'll get it. And I ended up in the dumb row with kids, a lot of kids like me that had troubles learning to read. And by the time, like a lot of children, by the time we get to about the fourth grade and we're passed on, there's no way to succeed in the classroom if you don't have basic reading and writing skills. The dominant language of the school house is the written word. And today, the dominant language of the workplace is the written word. So sometimes when people ask me, how did I beat the system? I never beat the system. People that can't read cannot beat the system. The system beats them. And you can never maximize your fullest potential if you can't read or write or spell in America. And that's the way it is. So I was passed on. By the time I got to the fifth grade, I started acting out some of my frustration and anger and shame and blame, and I call illiteracy in America a form of child neglect and child abuse, and that's analytical. That's not blaming anybody. I'm not angry at my loving family because they didn't teach me to read. I'm not mad at the school system that didn't teach me how to read. I am past that. All the real and imagined anger that I had, I've forgiven myself and others for not teaching me to read, but it caused me a great deal. The trauma of not knowing how to read caused me a great deal of trouble for 40 years of my life until I finally learned to read. And, you know, the program is Anything is Possible. And I always was optimistic. My father was so optimistic, and he was so encouraging all the time. But I can say I never really thought it was possible for me to ever learn to read. No matter how hard I tried or no matter how hard I prayed, I just couldn't get it. And so I feel like learning to read is like coming home, and it certainly has filled a big hole in my soul. I think adults that can't read, we're kind of suspended in our childhood. And emotionally and psychologically, and learning to read has allowed me to do a lot of unfinished business, and I'm very blessed to have had this opportunity to learn to read.
We're talking to John Corcoran, who says, quote, "I got a diploma, but I couldn't read it." And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and we're with John Corcoran, who tells us that 44% of adults in America cannot read at a fifth grade level. John, your mom and your dad, or you fall in love with your wife, Kathleen, who you've been married to for 46 years. Did you ever tell them, Mom, Dad, honey, I can't read?
I never told my parents that I couldn't read. And when a child doesn't, know how to articulate those things, or in some cases, I didn't want to add any more burden to my family. And I didn't want to cause them pain. And when I was in middle school, I had a lot of trouble. I was suspended from school. I was expelled from school. I spit on a teacher. I sat out in front of the principal's office for most of the seventh grade. So I really started acting out my anger and my frustration. And when they were coming to school for teachers' conferences, we weren't talking about my reading problem, which was the root of all these other problems. And I think it's sort of psychologically, and this just happens all the time, because there's a shame and blame involved, and there's an assumption, and we're called in childhood, we're called lazy, we don't try hard enough, and we're dumb, we're labeled dumb. We buy into some of those lies early, and they affect us. And like I said, my mother and father told me I was a winner for 6 years of my life. I didn't know that I was anything other than a winner until I went to school. And they had a different set of rules and measurements there. And I couldn't speak that language to succeed. No matter how hard I tried to please my teacher, I really couldn't turn in my homework. I couldn't do it. And how could my parents miss this? Well, parents miss this often. This is a kind of a common phenomenon because they make the assumption that the child is going to learn at school, and they downplay the problems. There's not intervention. We know a lot more about teaching people how to read now than we did in the past, but it is a phonetic language, and we kind of got away from that. There's a lot of debate and argument there. But my parents were I never considered them neglectful. My father was working two or three jobs to put food on the table. I look back and ask that. I can continually ask that question. My dad was always looking for a better job. So it was sort of after the Second World War, a lot of movement there, and so I just missed that. And by the time I got to the eighth grade, I had some athletic skills, and I wanted to participate in high school athletics, and I had to behave myself, and I was tired of embarrassing my parents and having them come to school, and the school was worried about me, my psychic, you know, but they weren't looking at my spelling. And a teenager doesn't know how to articulate their problem. It's really the adults that need to identify the problem and prescribe the solutions to it. And so when people ask me about why didn't I ask for help, we shouldn't expect children to be asking adults to help them learn the things that are necessary to succeed in life. It's the other way around, you know. And I got to high school, and I went underground, and I decided to behave myself so I could be eligible, and I started cheating a little bit. I dated the valedictorian. I was a homecoming king. I was, an athlete. I ended up graduating from high school because it was true in those days, as it is today, if you behave yourself in high school, you can get a diploma. I ended up with an offer to play at a Division I college basketball, and I took it, and I couldn't read. And I also want to be sure that to say that it wasn't the university. I got into the university because I had athletic skills. I got out of the university because I cheated. The system didn't cheat. The athletic department and my coaches didn't have anything to do with my deception. My cheating, you might say. So I just want to make that real clear. I have to own the responsibility as an 18-year-old, a 20-year-old who desperately wanted to get an education but didn't have the basic fundamental skills. I know it sounds crazy. I don't know how or why it happened, but that's what happened. And I always wanted to. You know, I hung around libraries, and I ran around with college prep kids. I never did. You asked the question about my wife. I never did tell anybody that I couldn't read. I would not trust any friend, boyfriend or girlfriend, that with that information. When I was in a college athlete, I could have tutoring in any course. But the problem was I couldn't be tutored. They were co-eds, and I was reading at the second or third grade level, and I certainly didn't want that to get out. I was a member of a social fraternity, and I had a social life. I had my athletic world. And so those things just, you know, they evolve. I didn't set out for that. But I was somebody that cheated in every single course that I took because I couldn't read. And there's a wide range of ways of cheating, and that's just having a copy of the previous test or a little bit more in detail. I guess I would invite, because of the shortness of this interview, I would invite people to read the book to connect some of these dots. But it was about my desperation. It wasn't about being clever. My parents didn't raise me to be dishonest. You know, they didn't know what I was doing. And when I wrote my first book, and my mother got to about the third chapter, and she said, "Where was I?" You know, and she couldn't finish the book. It was too painful for her.
You've explained, John Corcoran, how you got through college and high school, but how did you ever teach social studies in high school for 17 years, and you couldn't read?
Well, if that's not the craziest decision. To get out of the lion's cage, so to speak, get out of the university and then taunt the lion and then get back in the cage in a dominant language. The language is the written word there. And what motivated me, a series of circumstances. Life is full of circumstances, you know. And there was a shortage of teachers, and I was offered a couple jobs. And a military was facing me, and the Vietnam War was heating up, and all of those things, you know, for a 22-year-old facing it. And so I had this job offer, and I took it, and I was frightened. I did take practice teaching, in one of the courses, and I did teach math in a public high school, and I was observed by four university professors, you know, and so I could get by it with a body of knowledge. I did have a body of knowledge in math, in low-level math. I couldn't do any writing on the board or anything like that, and I always had to rely on interpreters. I dated and ran around with college prep kids. They were my libraries in a way. I tried to improve my oral language, grammar, and not use words and as much as I possibly could. So my whole world was oral and visual, and that's what I took to the classroom. I learned by listening and seeing. I created an environment in the classroom where I had two or three aides that did the interpreting for me, you know, wrote on the board and did some of those things. And it's kind of, again, it's pretty complicated in terms of the details. Just to give you an example, that in that environment, I had a circle. I never had any roles. I had a circle, and we had a lot of dialogue. We had a discussion. I would show a really powerful program on Roots. You remember Roots?
Oh, yes, yes.
And I showed that, and then we'd have discussions. We'd watch it together, and then we'd have some discussions, and that was in the day and a time where it was hard for a multicultural classroom to have those kinds of questions, and I was bold, and I knew these kids that couldn't read, and I had a lot of kids that nobody else wanted to deal with. I had a lot of John Corcorans in my classrooms. And I respected them, and I can say I did a pretty good job because I really worked hard. I probably had the state record for the number of guest speakers coming in with information, and I used all the tools I possibly could, including field trips. But I can say that I was a pretty good teacher in spite of all that. But I don't want pretty good teachers. I'm not an advocate for pretty good teachers. I want excellent teachers. And I don't want people in a classroom with the deficiency that I had. That was wrong. And there's a different moral dilemma and a different explanation for me as a teacher as compared to a child. I was innocent as a child. I don't owe anybody any apologies for being a child. No child needs to apologize to adults for not articulating a problem or not doing something. It's the adults that have the responsibility. And when I was a teenager, I was just a teenager, and I was confused and just like a lot of, and I couldn't compete in the classroom. There is no way for me or anybody that can't read to succeed in that environment. And it's kind of interesting because I had a lot of, as a teenager, I had jobs. I loved to work and make money and have the boss respect me for a hard day's work. And I didn't have any trouble with the law, you know. And I behaved and did my chores at home. I did all of these things. But to me, about the fourth grade on, the school place was a hostile environment. And I got up in the morning, and I fixed the bayonet, and I went to war because that was the way I perceived it in my child's mind, in my adolescent mind. And As I got older, and I used to think that literate people were my enemy, you know, and it was never literate people that were my enemy. It was illiteracy that was my enemy. That's the enemy of this society, in a way. And we are not going to improve the quality of education until we address this.
We're talking to John Corcoran, who heard Barbara Bush give a speech on adult illiteracy when he was 48. Changed his life. And I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. You're listening to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Crisula, and we're talking to John Corcoran. John, after listening to Barbara Bush talk about adult illiteracy, you go to a library and you meet a 65-year-old lady, Eleanor Condit. And what happened?
Well, she was. I went to the library after the. You know, learning. One of the things that we do, we really feel isolated when we keep our secret. We don't talk to anybody about our secret, and so it becomes bigger than life, you know, internally. And when I heard somebody like Barbara Bush talking about the subject, I didn't know it was that big a problem. I thought it was my personal problem. I didn't know it was a national problem at the scope. And I know that sounds so naive, but she rang the bell, and the adults were learning to read. And I went to the public library and talked to the adult director there, and that was the first person. I did tell my wife when we were engaged that I couldn't read. And I was a teacher at the time, and she thought I was like a lot of people say, I don't read much, you know. And that's what she thought. And I've often said that love is blind, and it's really deaf also. She was kind of hearing what she wanted to hear. She told me she was Rh negative, and we both cried. And it wasn't until 3 years later that she really found out how severe my problem was. But going back to to the tutoring there, Lynn Jones, who was the director of the volunteer tutor program at the public library in Carlsbad, California, directed me to doing a survey and doing a couple little tests, and I revealed to her my secret, and I weeped. You know, I cried like a baby because I had not told anybody this before. And she said, I got just the lady for you, and it was Eleanor. And she's a 65-year-old brilliant lady who never really, she wasn't an educator. She just loved the printed word. She loved to read herself, and she couldn't understand how anybody could go through life without knowing how to read. So, and she never had any educational psychology, or she had never had any training other than about 20 hours from the library there. And we started our journey. And in retrospect, and people want to know, what was that magic thing that she, what button did she press? I think she was the second grade teacher that I never really had. She was somebody who came along at the time and said, I can teach you to read. If you do these things, I can teach you to read. And then there were some breakthroughs. And I went for about 30 days without any improvement at all, not a clue. And then a couple of things started breaking it. And it is a phonetic language, and she started working with me in decoding the language. And I got about half of the sounds of the 44 sounds that we have. And I started reading at about the sixth grade level. And I thought I died and went to heaven. And from that, my appetite had grown, and I really outgrew her ability to take me to the next levels. And so, in retrospect, and this is very respectful, that she was the ambulance driver that got me to the Lindenmuth Clinic in San Luis Obispo, where I had a complete battery test done, first time in my life, and they identified a severe auditory discrimination problem. And I won't go into the details of that, but that was part of the problem. I could not process the sounds, and I went there and had 125 hours with Pat in her clinic up there, and we broke the code. I went from the second grade nonsense phonetic word attack skills to the 12th grade level, and that's what you call one of those aha big miracles. You know, you get to see the whole thing and feel it. So I was off and running, and I haven't stopped. And sometimes people ask me, how long did it take you to learn to read? Well, the initial steps were, I learned some things in a year and a half, but I'm still learning to read. I'm still learning how to write. It's a lifelong process. And if people think about that question, that's what we do. We continue to build our vocabulary. And so I have been, committed to being a lifelong learner. And I've fallen in love with the language. And I have a passion to share my experience, to open doors. And hopefully I invite other people that are living this secret to be bold enough to come out, just like who knows what's out there, and that we can learn to read. And it's never too late to learn to read.
John Corcoran, what do you say to a listener tonight who's bearing a secret? And earlier in the segment, you said you feel isolated, it becomes bigger than life. Whatever this secret is tonight, talk to them, encourage them to let go of that secret. How do they do it?
That is a real challenge. I'm here by the grace of God. I don't know if I can even explain how these things happen to me. I think that I have always had hope, and with hope, to have hope, you have to have faith. You have to believe in something, And I've got to share that I really gave up on myself in terms of learning to read. I didn't give up on some other things. I knew I could work and I could make money. I knew how to build a house. I knew how to build a subdivision. I knew I could. I was a winner. I mean, that was in my brain. But all of that was discounted in my psychic, because I couldn't do something that I was supposed to learn how to do when I was in the third grade, and that's why, in trying to answer your question, and to say what is that moment, I think that the moment sort of appears. Like, I listened to Barbara Bush. I heard somebody talking. I was in a grocery store, and I listened to two sisters talking about their adult brother who was going to the library and learning how to read. And it was all that hope again, and that faith. But even when I was there, I didn't think that was going to happen. My answer to your question is, it's the grace of God, and it's faith in the final analysis. And I can remember when I was 8 years old, I used to pray, please, Lord, when it's my turn to read tomorrow, when the teacher calls on me, let the words come out of my mouth. And I'd get up and out of bed and turn on the lights and pick up a book and to see if God gave me that for a miracle. And he didn't give it to me, And during the course of my young life, too, I felt like even God couldn't even pull this thing off. And so I've always been prayerful. I've always been hopeful. And I think I have always been bold enough to react, to try. One more time. Don't give up on yourself. Don't give up on yourself. Don't give up on yourself.
We're talking to John Corcoran, and I'm Jack Rasula. And don't you give up on yourself. And this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula, and we're with John Corcoran, author of The Teacher Who Couldn't Read and The Bridge to Literacy. John, tell us, if you will, about the John Corcoran Foundation.
Well, after I learned to read, I was asked to share my story, and I said, no way am I sharing my story. This is confidential. I live in Oceanside, California. I taught school here. My wife was a professional. My family lived here. And I, like I said earlier, that this was a this was embarrassing and shameful. And I didn't feel like airing my, putting my personal laundry out there. And I was very, very fearful of doing that because I didn't really want to invite other people to try to learn to read if we didn't really know how to teach people to read. And maybe I was just lucky, you know. And so I did a lot of research in terms of how we teach people to read and how people do learn to read. And when I decided to speak publicly, a part of it was I wanted to keep quiet, but the other part of me did want to find the second grade teacher and third grade teacher that didn't teach me to read and tell them I got it. You know, I was just full of joy. And when something like this happens to you, you're full of joy. But there's also some fear, and I didn't want to embarrass anybody. I didn't want to embarrass the school district that I worked in, the university that I graduated from, my family. I wanted to put the focus on the good news. Is the good news that it's never too late to learn to read. And that's the good news. And that's what I have tried to focus on. And I think one of the things America has done in the last 20 years that is probably one of the most important things, and we don't get to see the results of it so much, but we spent $200 or $300 million on research, and we now know how to teach people like me to read. And I guess I would say the foundation, I got into the foundation, and it was sort of a public awareness. I told my wife, I'm going to do this for about a year, and then everybody will know that there's hope, and then there'll be a reform, and we'll teach everybody to read. Well, that didn't happen. It's almost 20 years, more than 20 years later, and I'm still an advocate in terms of the awareness. To solve any social or personal problem, you have to be able to articulate what that problem is, and then you offer solutions for it. America doesn't really have the will to articulate that problem, and the problem is that we are not teaching our children how to read, write, and spell. I think sometimes America is as embarrassed as I was about telling the truth about my deficiencies. America can send a camera to Mars and take a picture and bring it back, but it's failing to prepare its children for success in school. And as long as we continue to sort of deny that, that's what I did for a long time. I always knew I couldn't read, but I certainly was not going to tell anybody I couldn't read. And I think America has to get to the point where she really says what the problem is. When we talk about education, well, literacy is the cornerstone to education. Don't talk about educational reform until you talk about fixing the foundation and setting that cornerstone and focusing and concentrating on that. And don't be fearful. You have to be bold. And I'm speaking to you as a bold, literate person now, but I was a fearful person. I was a person, you know, when it came to reading, I was terrorized by the printed word. I'd walk a country mile to get around that experience. So I think that America has to really articulate the real problem. And, you know, we talk about poverty and the education gap between minorities and poor people. Illiteracy is not poverty. It creates poverty. And so it doesn't come from that source. Get me on track here, Jack. I'm kind of babbling here.
No, you're doing great. If you want to learn more, www.johncorcoran.com. How do you explain, John Corcoran, that the teachers and the school boards throughout America allow this illiteracy?
Yeah, this is real. This is like walking through a minefield. You know, teachers and educators are sensitive, and they've been blamed for everything, you know, that's wrong with the country. And I understand their sensitivity. And why did they do it? They didn't set out to do it. Nobody woke up. None of my teachers woke up in the morning and said, I'm going to ruin John Corcoran's life. I'm going to not teach him to read today. We just did it. And what we've done is we've institutionalized illiteracy in our school system. And we have been in denial, and we have social promotions been going on for a long time. We just pass people through. There used to be a place for people. In the eighth grade, men dropped out of school. They couldn't read, and they went to the workplace. They went to the farm. They went to the factory. And today, they don't have. We don't have those kinds of options for people. So there's even more pressure on the whole system, the whole society, to be more literate. And the demands for literacy skills today are increasing. They're not decreasing. And so the problem is pushing up against us right now. And teachers and educators are beginning to talk about it. Even from the time I spoke, the first time I spoke publicly, it was pretty stressful for me to talk to a group of educators. I have gotten several standing ovations now. So I think we're communicating a little bit better along those lines.
John Corcoran, when you meet Eleanor Condit someday in heaven, she's going to say, I love you. I'm proud of you. Thanks for all you've done for literacy in America. John, keep up the great work. Honored to have you.
Thank you, Jack.
Please join us next Sunday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening. And make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. And we hope you had a great Thanksgiving. Spoken.